So I have lots of things over here on my end of the studio because I am commandeering an episode
Scotch.
I have lots of scotch. So you and I are going to do a fun little thing. Sometimes we do.
It seems like a fun big thing.
Yeah. Interesting topics.
Right.
That, I don't know, divert, maybe not divert from our normal theme.
Right.
But maybe sometimes they do a little bit, and we do like a series, but we don't really divert too much. Well, what we're going to do is we're just going to have a little bit of fun on today's episode of Flogging and the next episode and the episode after that. We're going to do a series, a new series of Flogging episodes based on just booze. It's going to be great.
Hold on.
Boo!
It's going to be us saying things and people booing us. We have a crowd here in the
We actually just call that our live shows.
Boo! See, there we go. There's one person booing us already. So we're gonna do liquor shows. It's gonna be awesome. It's gonna be lots of fun. I have to do most of the work, and David's just gonna sit there and drink and make fun of me. So in other words,
what's gonna happen?
A normal show. Well, we're gonna start off with scotch today, but for the intro, I thought it would be good to have a little bit of review.
Okay.
So many episodes ago, I should have looked this up, but I can't remember what episode it was. I know what it was called. We called it Kentucky Chew. It was one of the first episodes when we came back from our hiatus.
Right.
And we talked a little bit about how to taste whiskey, I guess. But we did it very briefly and very quickly. And I don't think the episode was focused specifically on whiskey. We talked about booze. But today we're going to be focusing on whiskey. But what I wanted to do is bring you through a refresher course.
This was episode 17, Kentucky Chew, which, by the way, I just need to point out, I use the second rule that you're going to describe and the Kentucky Chew on a regular basis.
Good. Good.
Even with mouthwash.
There's David Kentucky chewing some Listerine. Boy, he learns well. But for our audience, maybe for your sake, but for my sake, too, we're going to go through a quick refresher on the Jim Briggs method of tasting whiskey.
And Jim Briggs is the head honcho.
Head honcho.
Of the Spokane Whiskey Club.
Whiskey Club. And that's exactly how we pronounce it. I'm Jim from the Spokane Whiskey Club.
That's Foghorn Leghorn for you.
We're still going strong.
What I say, what?
What I say, boy. So what I'm going to do for you, David, is I'm going to pour what they call a flight.
Okay.
We're going to do a flight of Scotch whiskeys. I have selected three.
That's the thing about when you're trying a bunch of different kinds of Scotch. You could try a normal dose of all of them, like a normal amount of all of them.
A normal dose of all of
them. But then you would be severely drunk. And so David, what I say to that is,
fly, you fools.
Fly, you fools. I have every Scotch available here in the studio, and we're going to go through them one by one. No, I brought three categories that we're going to talk about today, but three representative whiskeys. From the three major categories, at least according to me, Jim, in my humble but accurate opinion. First up, I'm going to pour you a sample of a whiskey that I should have brought last time. But this is the beloved Lagavulin 16.
I have that downstairs.
Yes. A lovely whiskey. You've had it
before. Got that for my birthday. Yeah.
Great. You like it?
I do. I love it.
Wonderful. Then I'll pour you some. Well, this is weird. Talking and pouring at the same time is weird. So I have to do this right. I have to get away from the microphone and not talk.
Yeah, you could. I'll say some things.
Fill this dead air.
I will fill the silence. Jim is pouring. This is going to be a good sound.
Okay, I poured just a sampling.
Right.
A smattering of Lagavulin 16. We're not going to go too crazy today.
Well, no.
All right. Next up, I'm going to pour one of my favorite brands. It's called Glenfiddich. Glenfiddich.
No, that's well, you're going to get into what each
Speyside whiskey. Yeah. Just a little bit on the whiskeys, but, this,
I think I've tried that actually. So
Lagavulin 16 Smoky, Glenfiddich 15. This is called Solera Reserve. It's going to be what we're going to talk about, what's called sherried whiskeys. And we're going to talk about that. This is,
they market that at Sherry's.
What they do? Is that a joke?
You said it's sherried.
Okay. David, was that a joke?
It's like talking to a brick wall.
Yeah, there you go. And then I'm going to pour another glass.
Are you going to remember which one of these each of these is?
Yeah, you'll be able to tell too.
Well, I know by taste, but like can't tell by looking at them from where I
sit. What I'll do is I'll place them on the desk in the order in which I pour them.
Ah, well said.
And then I'm going to pour another Glenfiddich for you.
This, LTR.
This is a 14-year-old. You're not driving, so I'll pour a little bit more for you. Glenfiddich 14-year-old Bourbon Barrel Reserve. And we'll talk about that.
Bourbon Barrel.
I'll explain
Scotch. That's fascinating.
Yeah, I'll explain that. So let me pour some
While you're doing that, I should tell you, Sarah and I went to New York City and we decided to get some coffee while we were there because New York is known for its coffee. So we went to a Starbucks.
Okay.
But it's actually one of these really cool places. See, all of that was supposed to be set up, and you're supposed to think that I'm dumb and I don't know anything about coffee right now.
No. Why?
Because New York is not known for its coffee and because we went to a Starbucks.
I went, oh yeah. Okay, great. New York is mental note. New York
to be
is
fair,
great.
You're pouring.
Okay. Yeah. I'm pouring booze.
But no, they have a what's called a Starbucks Reserve Roastery there.
I've heard of those.
And it's really, really cool. If you ever have the opportunity there, they have them in a lot of different cities, but if you ever have the opportunity to go to one of these, it's worth visiting because they'll tell you all about like the history of how they make different kinds of coffees and all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah. Those, they're starting to open up.
That was such a good sound. You need to keep that.
I'm going to keep it. I've heard that roasteries are starting to become customer destinations now. Not that they weren't before.
That makes sense.
But they're being really marketed
right
as a go-to place for customers. So yeah, I've heard about that. Okay. Mine are poured. I have my flight.
Right.
You have your flight. Hey, let's go ahead and get started, David. Why don't you go ahead and grab your first whiskey? We'll start with the Lagavulin.
All right.
And if you're confused on where the Lagavulin is, just smell it. I'm sure you'll be able to figure it out. Folks, remember,
Lagavulin. Is the house on fire?
Yeah, it's a very smoky whiskey. So, all right. So first rule, before you sniff, before you sip, swirl.
Before you sniff, swirl.
Yeah. Wine people do this a lot. We talked about this last episode.
Right. Whiny people do all sorts of things.
One of the things they do is they take their little glass, they kind of perch their elbow out and, you know, and they just kind of sit there.
Do they extend the pinky?
Maybe the pinky, I don't know. But what they're doing is they're swirling their glass and they're looking off and being judgmental of poor people.
Well,
so,
yeah.
So why are we doing that? Why are we swirling? It's not just a thing that wine people do or whiskey people do just because you're supposed to. It actually does a thing.
Right.
Have you ever kind of thought about or why people do that?
I have, yes.
Why do you think they do that?
Because it gets the more than just the surface level of liquid to expose to the air.
Breaks the surface tension.
Right.
Yeah, because if you anything that you smell, like if you're smelling anything, it's because it's evaporating before your very nose.
That's mostly true.
Before your very nostrils.
That's actually not true of some things.
But at least for whiskey,
right.
It's evaporating right now as we speak, and you're smelling it because it's evaporating. So in order to get more, just break the surface tension and swirl it. So folks...
I actually also find that alcohol breaks the tension generically.
Yeah, in more ways than one.
Yeah, especially, yeah.
Yeah.
With family.
Use alcohol to swirl yourself. When David goes back to Philly... He brings his Lagavulin with him. So
I should have done that.
When you nose, and when I say nose, you know what I mean, right? We're sniffing, but in the whiskey world, in the wine world, it's called nosing, which is kind of the premier thing in whiskey tasting is the nose. It gets the most attention. It gets the most buzz, the most press.
What's very odd.
Things. I know it's very odd because it should be what it tastes like.
Right.
I mean, and I'm getting into that more, but the first thing you do is nose it. So when you nose, don't sniff sharply. Sniff slowly.
Right. But the important thing, the reason it's called nose and not smell, is that you do have to get your nose submerged slightly into the liquid.
do put your nose into the liquid, folks. And sniff. Give it a good pull. No, don't do that. Don't do that.
It will make you value your sinuses.
Yeah, it will. Nose slowly, but fully, David, is the official point on the Jim Briggs.
What do you mean by fully?
Like fully is in like a full breath.
Right. So, okay, that's going to take a while.
Don't just go... You know, just a real quick like that. Just and that's what my nose sounds like when I sniff. It goes no. Take a good deep breath.
Right.
You know, take it in.
It's going to take a while.
Take it in.
Okay.
Okay. So so let's do that. What do you now? When you drink whiskey at home, when you imbibe your Lagavulin, what glass do you use?
I just have little glass tumblers.
Just little glass tumblers. You should consider.
We are going to once we have room.
Okay. One of the rules of whiskey tasting is never tell another man how to taste his or smell his whiskey.
Right.
But I'm going to go ahead and...
The other rule is you don't talk about whiskey club.
Yeah. You can never really talk when you drink. It's just you have to sit...
You don't talk about it, period.
Like, right. Yeah. You have to sit in the chair.
It's like that other thing that I don't talk about.
And brood. Good. And I'm glad you won't talk about that. So... When you know, so let's talk about glasses. Folks, I poured David some Lagavulin 16 in what's called a Glencairn whiskey glass.
Right.
It's a very specific, short, stubby, it's a stubby little stem. Mm-hmm. Wine glasses have that long stem. Glen Cairns have like this, what would you call this? Kind of like
a tulip shape.
Like a tulip shaped glass. Oh, wait,
you're talking about the stem.
The stem. Yeah, it's just big enough and stout enough for you to grip it with your fingers, but it's not a long stem. So now let's go ahead and smell this thing. Lovely. This is what Ron Swanson smells. When he drinks his Lagavulin 16, when he noses it on his leather chair, this is what he's smelling.
Mm-hmm.
I feel so connected to the man.
That makes sense.
What do you like about Lagavulin?
I like that it is peated. I'm a big fan of peated.
I didn't know that last time that you were such a fan of peated whiskey. I didn't bring because I didn't want to scare you.
I mean, honestly, like that's the thing that, well, okay. So the
aroma very much attracts you.
For me, I have to speak of it in terms of things that I can compare it to. And I've only tried like maybe half a dozen kinds of whiskey. I like it more than bourbon because it doesn't burn as much going down.
You did tell me that.
It's almost like heartburn, that kind of thing that you can get, that I get from bourbon. I've heard that's fairly common. And then, in comparison to the mermaid, scotch,
the what Laphroaig. Am I thinking?
The Laphroaig.
The mermaid scotch.
I find the aftertaste of the Laphroaig to be better.
Okay.
Very good.
So when you nose it at different angles, it's okay to kind of do one nostril and then do the other. And when don't just kind of sniff and go crazy, over and over and over again, give your nose a break.
Right.
That's okay. Cause your nose does need a break when you're sipping really high octane alcohol. David just broke his nose.
You get me a Kleenex.
You are a literal person.
That is true.
So when you're done nosing and you want to sip small, don't sip big, because if you sip too much, your taste buds are going to shut down. That's why when people do shots of whiskey, they're not drinking it to savor it, obviously.
Right.
But when you take, I don't know what that is, maybe like an ounce and a half, or maybe slightly less, a shot glass is. Maybe
I think
less.
A shot is...
But it's a big swallow. And your taste buds don't really have a chance to figure out what's happening before you swallow it anyway. But too much whiskey will shut your taste buds down. It's too much. Mm. So when you sip small so you can taste more of it, which sounds weird, but sip small so you can taste more. So I'm going to try it.
I'm going to watch you.
Go ahead and swallow right away, because the first sip for me is always acid reflux. The second sip's a lot better.
You should see somebody about this, that. I can wear away the lining of your esophagus. A commercial once told me that.
Okay, good. which brings me to the next point of the Jim Briggs tasting method. For every year that the scotch is aged, every year corresponds to a second that you should keep it in your mouth.
Right.
So you're not going to do this. We're going to keep Lagavulin in our mouth for 16 seconds.
Yep.
If it gets too much, shoot it to the back.
Mm-hmm.
The back of your tongue can take a lot more than the tip. So keep it away from your tip or it's just going to go crazy on you.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of swirl it around. We're going to get the full brunt of the mighty Lagavulin 16 right here, right now. Let's go ahead and do it. Go. I lost track of the time, but that was a good one. So, there's pretty much a fire going on in your mouth, but a smoky fire. That's what I mean.
Well, I mean, where there is fire, there's smoke. That's what I've heard.
So that should make a difference when you're drinking. When you keep it in your mouth longer, because that gives you a longer finish. What happens in your mouth after you swallow is also part of whiskey tasting. So when you swirl it around your mouth, I call that marinating the steak. Just marinate your mouth with it.
Right.
It's a bigger flavor experience when you swallow. And it just expands the flavor experience of really any whiskey, but especially an Islay whiskey. If it burns, move it. I already talked to you about that. Breathe after swallowing. That's the finish.
Breathing is good.
Just
sit
and breathe and just kind of note to yourself what happens, and then recharge your taste buds. So when you're done, just take a sip of water. What I like to do is carbonated water is a good
fizzy water.
It's a fizzy water is a great palate cleanser.
And
then just repeat for as long as you want. And that's how you taste whiskey. But we started off with Lagavulin 16. We're going to taste the other ones as we go through our show, and we'll comment as we go. You want to go ahead and start the show?
I think is this starting the show? Yeah, we're starting the show. We're not starting the main topic.
This is episode 62.
You put two musical breaks in? I'm very confused.
I'm wondering, David, when the day will come, if the day will ever come, when I say, David, you want to start the show, and you just say yes.
Is that what you want?
You never do that.
All right, let's try it. Let's try
it. You never, ever do that. You always have something to say.
We'll do it. Go ahead.
So now that we've established how to enjoy the whiskey in front of you, would you like to start the show, David?
How high?
Great.
The podcast you are about to hear contains the histrionic and problematic conversations of a stodgy Presbyterian and a casserole-loving Baptist. Their interactions are volatile at times and unpleasant most of the time. In many nations, this is considered a mild form of torture. We strongly advise you to stop this nonsense and go do something useful with your life. Otherwise, if you insist on listening to this mess, welcome to the lightest form of flogging.
Thank you, Deep Voice Man. I also welcome you to the Lightest Form of Flogging podcast, episode 62. Yay. I am your boozy host, Jim, and sitting across the room from me at a contractually negotiated 29 and a half feet is my co-host, David, who, if I had to voice one concern about him, it would be that he is disturbingly intellectual at times, capable of looking into his cereal bowl and seeing the spirit of the universe. So, David, hey.
I think that's acid.
We're back into the show.
Right.
I'm pretty excited. This is a great topic. I hope our audience likes this.
Right.
Do you have any questions about what I just said?
I don't.
Okay, good. Then we'll just
I thought about asking where it came from, and then I
you just stopped caring.
Realized I didn't want to know.
Yeah, it's just from a book I read. I thought it was funny.
Was it a Crossway paperback?
No. No, Kevin DeYoung does that. When he writes his Crossway paperbacks, he writes about how disturbingly intellectual people are. Right. Staring into their cereal bowls and seeing the spirit of the universe. So how are you doing over there?
I am doing all right.
We're both pretty tired today. We both stayed up into the night.
Right.
Doing various things.
I didn't actually. I went to bed at 9.
Well, that's right. You were joking at the time.
Yeah.
Your bedtime is just going to get sooner and sooner as the years go by.
Yeah. By the time I'm 70, I'd like to think that I'll be asleep. Just period.
Yeah. Asleep. Do you not want to make it past 70? Have you decided the end date of your death? How old do you want to be?
I had, and then I got married, and now this is going to sound super cheesy, yeah, but like I wanted to die early, and I'm like, no, I can live a long time.
Yeah, do it a little bit.
As long as Sarah's still alive, I can live a long time.
Okay, good. Well, that's good. I like that.
I know that sounds super cheesy, but
yeah,
it's a thing.
It's a thing. It's a good thing, and it warms my heart.
I think a lot of people experience that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think a lot of people want to live long in their lives, like really long, but I don't know if I want to live till I'm 100 because I'm just going to be so miserable with all the heart surgeries, mm-hmm, and the brain tumors that they're going to have to extract.
Right.
I mean, I may not want to live that long.
Yeah. Well, you should probably like
diet
and exercise. Yeah. Yeah.
I almost got 20, but then I slipped back.
Right.
I'm hovering around 18 or 19 pounds, but you know what?
Oh, pounds lost.
Yeah.
I was like, wow. Wow, Jim.
Whoa.
You don't look it.
What a change.
What is that, air weight?
Hey. I just got rid of all of it. So so what do you say we start with our housekeeping items?
You mean follow up?
Yeah. Well, no. Let's promote our...
Right.
Let's do our little promotion
here. We've gotten no responses yet because we have four listeners so far.
It's okay. You know, well, last time we did this, we got a pretty decent
turnout.
Pretty decent turnout. I'm sure they'll participate someday.
Someday.
But folks, let's go ahead and tell you about a little promotion. We've got a social media promotion on Facebook, Twitter. If you're a fan of the show and you listen to the show, we are encouraging you to take a picture of yourself while having some earbuds on. Make it look like you're listening to some show, and take a picture of yourself with the look on your face that you usually have when you listen to the show, which is usually a look of sadness, pain, discomfort. Why don't you put a hashtag on that picture? I can't remember what it was.
Flogcast.
Hashtag Flogcast. And David and I, as the entries come pouring in, we're going to pick the best one.
The one that we like the best.
And the best picture.
That we like the best.
That we like the best of a person painfully listening to our show.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get a book by Kevin DeYoung called Just Do Something, signed by either Michael J. Fox or Bill Hasinger. We're not really quite sure.
I'm pretty sure it's going to be Bill Hasinger.
Probably Bill Hasinger. I should probably have David take a picture of me today so I can participate.
Oh, because you don't have like a camera or a screen or headphones.
Or electronics on my phones. No, I just have LinkedIn and it would probably look weird there. It would reflect it would reflect poorly on my potential employers.
Oh, man.
Putting that on there. So we're real excited for you guys to participate. So if you are a fan of the show, please help the show. This is to help your beloved show and promote
or
it on social
to help
media.
Just this show. This actually probably won't help any of your beloved shows. Mm.
Yeah, it probably won't help very much in your life. But please do that, folks. And We're pretty excited about that. So let's go ahead and get started with follow-up, David.
Ah, yes. You had items.
Could you start? Because I need a breather.
All right. All right. So let's see. Calendar. Nope. That's not what I'm looking for. Let's see. First one is I tried to make a tongue twister out of Gary Vaynerchuk's name. Mm. I said how much Vayner could a Vaynerchuk Vayner if a Vayner could Vayner Vayner. Should have been how much Vayner can a Vaynerchuk Chuck if a Vayner could Chuck Vayner.
Okay.
It's pretty obvious.
Sure.
And I'm really disappointed in myself.
Oh, don't worry. I was very proud of you then, and I'm proud of you now.
And then I have another thing here, but I might need to circle back around to it after you've done some of your items, because I realized there was a little bit of preparation here. But I will ask the question.
Yeah.
Did you look up Denny's Twitter, as I suggested?
I haven't. Okay. Honestly, I completely forgot.
Once you're done with your follow-up, I will read a few select tweets.
Oh, wonderful.
Or toots, as you would say.
We're gonna see if this is the real deal.
And then I sent you a thing.
You sent me a thing?
I did. I sent you a video. Did you see that video?
I watched the first part of it, and then I think I fell asleep.
That's fair. Yeah.
Not because of you, but because
launched the Geneva Notes for Relight.
Yeah. Hey, the Relight app is becoming ever brighter.
It's true.
Added finally the famous Geneva Notes from the Geneva Study Bible.
Or the Geneva Bible, as it was called. But it really is the Geneva Study Bible for all intents and purposes. Right.
Pretty cool notes. I really like them.
Yeah. You looked at them?
The few times that I've perused them, actually, I believe it might have been the first time I saw a Geneva Bible, a mutual friend of ours, his name sounds like Fionn I. Allen.
Right. Oh, yeah. I forgot he got one.
Fionn I. Allen. And he had one for the longest time.
Right.
And I looked through it. And I thought, these were kind of really cool. These are published when?
1599. Well, actually 1560, depending on which version you have.
And I don't know if they've been updated at all or if they're, I mean, obviously the spelling has been changed.
Yeah, they haven't been. The ones that we released anyway are basically the originals. I'm not actually sure. I'm going to ask an expert if they're the 1560 or the 1599. I think it might be some combination, but there's not that much difference.
Yeah. Yeah. So real exciting. Got any feedback on those? Have your relighters?
You know, I sent it, I showed the Covenanters Facebook group this, and they were like, this needs to be a print Bible.
What are you talking about? Why does it need to be?
Wouldn't that be cool?
Isn't there already a Geneva?
So this would be the KJV, John Brown of Haddington's cross references,
and
the Geneva notes. And Sarah and I were talking about it. We could do like various theological articles from like Calvin and Puritans. Like we could print a legit like goatskin leather bound, like really nice with the Westminster Confession.
Don't do the dinky light paper. Do the thicker paper. For once, I want to have a Bible.
You understand?
Like if I flip the page too fast, I feel like it's gonna disintegrate.
That's because it's a Bible.
And there's a lot of pages in it. Is that what you're trying to say?
Great. Basically, yeah.
Thank you, teacher.
Well, like I mean, when you think about it, like
I have Bibles that have thicker.
Can you show me some of them? I'm actually really interested in this because we can't really start a Kickstarter right now because I don't think we would get the support behind it. But it's kind of like on our docket when we have an audience of a few hundred, maybe a few thousand people following us on whatever channels, and we could like get the word out and actually get support for it. Then I think we could actually do this, and I think people it could be really cool.
People would buy that.
I think they might.
No, I have an old NASB.
If we marketed it correctly.
Isn't that always the case? If anything is successful, it has to be marketed correctly. It was marketed correctly. Okay, great. Real excited about that. Is that it for you? Or do I have to do mine now?
You are going
to
do yours, yes.
Let's go ahead and start with, we got a voicemail. Yay.
Hello.
A listener of ours sent in a voicemail, and we're going to go ahead and listen to it right now. So David will fire it up.
Hey, guys. This is your faithful but forgotten listener, Tiny Blue Cat Screaming Keeper. I had a question regarding the last episode. Jim claimed to have slid a 407-pound ring 29 and a half feet across the desk to David. And I'm just very curious, what does Jim's workout regimen look like? Jim, if you could please enlighten us all so that we can all get swole enough to slide giant rings contractually obligated distances, that would be much appreciated. Thank you, guys. Hopefully I won't see you next week. Maybe I will. Goodbye.
Well, that was a thing.
Yeah, that was a thing. Tobiskibibi Keeper, I believe that's how you pronounce it, frequent voicemailer of the show. My friend, I do have an exercise regimen that I keep. To keep my figure going and to be able to lift very heavy rings of power to slide them across desks. My workout regimen generally involves shooting guns in my underwear, drinking vodka cranberries, or snacking on Little Debbie's on a good day, all at the same time. So now that that's been dealt with, moving on.
You must buy underwear a lot if you shoot holes in it.
No, I don't shoot the underwear. I shoot with underwear on.
It'd be weird if you were doing it commando.
You need a clarification.
All right.
That.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Last week, David mentioned that he, as a young lad, memorized he memorized pi to an a long length. Do you remember how long what it was?
I don't know. It wasn't that long. Can you count?
Anything past the, yes.
You want to count?
Sure.
Okay. 3.14159265358979846264.
Okay, stop it. You're already
I'm not sure if that was actually correct, but in back in my prime, not prime number.
Good. That's pretty good. Most people know like 3.14. That's what I know. Most people, I think, get 3.14, and there's no indication that it keeps on. It's just 3.14. But yeah, pi goes on for a considerably long amount of time.
Forever.
And I thought of a guy that my wife saw a YouTube video on and then read a book about him. He became known for memorizing pi to 22,514 decimal places from memory.
Right. Memory and, palace.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. But I couldn't figure out his name. I kept saying like Daniel Tennant, David something. And then you made a joke about one of the doctors whose name is David something. David
Tennant.
Anyways, I looked him up when I got home. His name is Daniel Tammet.
Right.
He's an English, highly functioning autistic savant. So he's not just autistic. He is a savant autistic. Generally speaking, the autistic savants are not very sociable. Let's just put it that way. Mm-hmm. But Daniel Tammet has found a way to be quite high functioning. He's been on David Letterman talking about his abilities. And he wrote an autobiography called Born on a Blue Day that I just picked up randomly one day. This guy is pretty fascinating.
Is he the one who talks about the cereal bowl universe thing?
I don't know if that's him. That might be Stephen Hawking.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. I've been waiting for you to say his name this entire time.
You completely disarmed me. How long have you been practicing that?
Oh, I learned to do it like in high school. Okay.
That's really good. Anyways, what I was going to say was Daniel Tammet, that's just one of his amazing abilities, and he can do incredible calculations and computations in his head. Incredible. And he's talked about how he can process that.
Why are we talking about this again? I don't remember what we were talking about.
Sorry. We were talking about pi.
Right.
It started with your memorization of pi to a pretty high degree. And then that made me think of a guy who I know had an insane feat of memory.
Okay.
And he could do pi. This is just I feel so like like I'm weighing you down over here. And he does lots of other things and no one cares. So
in fairness, you're working to become worse at weighing me down.
Thank you.
Through diet and exercise.
Okay.
Jim just drank all of the whiskey.
Yeah, Jim's drinking from the bottle now. Anyways.
What was that you just tried?
That was Glenfiddich 15, Solar Reserve. Last episode, I said the word longevity. Didn't even know it. when I said it, I discovered this while I was editing.
Right.
And I just thought, isn't that funny? What I meant to say was longevity. I almost said longevity again. Not longevity. Longevity is the word I should have said.
Honestly, that wasn't very perspicuous of you.
Yeah, not very. but that does it for follow-up. I see over there that you have some funny tweets for me. Let's see if these guys got some game, as you say they do.
All right. Dr. Seuss, : I made some green eggs and ham. Us. We'll take it from here.
Okay.
How many licks does it take to get to the center of a potato?
How many?
That's it.
Okay. Good enough.
Egg salad? Oh, you mean omelets?
Makes sense.
Cold brew, coffee rare. Hot coffee, coffee well done.
Okay. All right. Not very funny, but cute. I guess I would categorize that as cute.
Hash browns are potato confetti. Throw at your own discretion. You just don't have a sense of humor.
I do.
Save money every month by turning your bacon back off, bake off when not in use.
Okay.
You see, it's
I'm laughing at the silence at this point.
Oh, that's not fun. Let's see. Let me go back further.
It's hot in here.
Yeast judge, colon. All rise. And that's the joke.
Okay. All right. Okay. They knew that was a dumb joke.
Yes.
If they didn't put in that last part, it would have not worked.
Yep.
But that made it work. I like that one.
Meatballs don't lie about what they are. That's why we trust them.
It's actually not bad. I like that one.
I mean, you really should just scroll through here. What you'll find is that like some of them just aren't funny to you and some of them are just like uncommonly hilarious.
Should they all be funny? Can they all be funny?
Meatloaf is the exact opposite of soup.
The exact opposite.
The exact opposite of soup.
I like that wording.
Toasters are kitchen printers.
Okay. That's all right.
Toast is bread with a dark secret.
Okay. I like that more. That's not bad.
A bowl of soup qualifies as an above ground pool.
Okay.
Bread is acoustic toast.
That's pretty good. That's good.
Crepes are pancakes that got asked to prom. Oatmeal is...
Oh, wait. Is the joke because they got like really thin?
Yeah, and fancy.
Okay. Oh, fancy, fancy. I got it. Fancy.
Oatmeal is edible quicksand.
Okay.
How to grow a Denny's. And I didn't actually finish reading this one before I decided. Okay. It's just, I read the first part and I was like, this has to be good. How to grow a Denny's. Step one, order pancakes. Step two, plant pancakes. Step three, pour syrup over spot. Step four, wait 2 to 4 weeks. Step five, enjoy your new Denny's.
Okay.
And that's how you do it.
Okay.
Man, that didn't go. I think you have to be reading them. Like, it's not funny when
isn't that the point?
Maybe
though?
It's my delivery.
Some jokes work well when in person, I guess, as they say, and some jokes work well on paper.
Well, you can cut that whole segment if you want.
No, I mean, I might keep it. We'll see. We're already running pretty long, but that's because the nature of today's episode requires me going on and on and on and on.
In that case, I'll just interject with the funniest Denny's tweets throughout the show.
Thank you. So, well, great. Let's go ahead and take a music break. Then we'll get back to our main topic. David, we're going to talk about scotch today. I'm pretty excited. I hope you're ready. We have our whiskeys poured. The room is full of aromas. Wonderful. You want to read a Denny's tweet?
No, I'll wait.
Go ahead.
I'll wait until there's a lull.
There has been a lull since episode 4.
So yeah, that's true.
Ahead. Why don't you go ahead?
Waitress, can I take those plates for you? Cat waitress, can I push those plates off the table for you?
Okay, that's pretty good. That's really good. This is Denny's Twitter.
That's just, yeah.
And they just send out these random tweets just for fun. Yep. And we get to enjoy them. I like that.
They have 17,000 tweets.
Bless you, Denny's. Bless you.
And 513,000 followers.
Great. Oh, really? That's it? Well,
that's not a lot on Twitter.
You're right. That's not bad.
Hardly anybody uses Twitter. Twitter's just shooting themselves in the foot every chance they get.
Yeah. I deleted mine a long time ago because my 13 followers were not appreciating my jokes, which was really true.
You would do well on Twitter, though.
I thought that I would for that reason, because I could just do funny little zingers.
You should do the Spokane Whiskey Club Twitter.
I did. Oh. And it was much more successful than mine.
Right.
But I just got tired of Twitter. I really did.
Everybody does.
It wasn't really helping us at all. And I could do the funny one-liners on Facebook and get laughs.
Right.
I couldn't get laughs on Twitter. So that's what you got to do, my brother. Okay. Comedians got to go where the laughs are.
That's true.
Speaking of where the laughs are, let's talk about scotch. We're going to talk about scotch today. Here's how we're going to do the episode.
Right.
We're going to frame this discussion in a very specific way. What I want to do is I want to give you, David, me, myself, because I'm always learning, and our audience, in my view, the top 15 things you need to know about Scotch whiskey. These are not in any particular order. So they don't rank in importance from 15 down to 1 being the most important. These are just 15 things, somewhat connected, somewhat not connected, that I think would be beneficial to know if you want to learn a little bit more about Scotch whiskey.
Right.
So we're just going to go ahead.
So you're just going to say all of them while I drink?
Yeah, I'm just going to go through them, and then we're going to end the show. No. I'm just going to go ahead and do one by one. If you have comments or questions or concerns, or if you have nothing at all in your heart towards me, don't do anything. No matter what it is, don't do anything. Yes, your comments, sir. You look like you're about to say something.
No, I happened to breathe in while I was approaching the microphone.
Until you and I are separated, because I think the show is going to actually go a lot more smooth. Because I'm not going to be looking at you playing off your cues.
Well, because what we'll do is I'll record an episode, then you'll record an episode, then I'll record an episode.
Well, we're no longer going to podcast together. It's just going to be, okay, I'm David here. Here's my episode.
Going to do a...
we're going to talk about Relight.
An after show immediately.
Okay, we're going to start the show with an after show. All right, so number one, Scotch whiskey is, well, it's whiskey made in Scotland. The spelling-wise, whiskey is not spelled... Scotch whiskey is not spelled with an E. That's some people I say this because this is kind of a thing. People get confused on how to properly spell their particular whiskey. So if you're drinking bourbon whiskey, whiskey is spelled with an E.
Right.
If you're drinking Scotch whiskey, forget the E. It's just W H I S K Y.
What about French whiskey?
French whiskey is.
It actually has four E's, but they're all silent.
No E. No E for French.
Oh, they don't is that
really,
a thing?
They don't really. Right. They don't really have a bustling whiskey industry. They have a couple of distilleries, but not that much.
And the French love to bustle.
They do, you know, ever since the Maginot Line, they've been bustling away from the Germans. So Scotch whiskey, as you might imagine, is the most prominent whiskey style in the world.
I did not know that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess in terms of pop culture, lately bourbon's been kind of in making the rounds, but whiskey is always the whiskey people think of. Like when they want to go to a bar,
right,
they order what they think is Scotch on the rocks.
Right.
And it's always Scotch. No one ever really goes to a bar to order bourbon.
Stonehenge, right?
What?
Scotch on the rocks. Anyway.
That's funny. That was... Alert. That was funny.
I'm going to ask, because I think I understand this, but I'm asking an expert.
The prestigious part? Like me claiming that Scotch is the most prominent, prestigious whiskey style in the world? Is that what you're referring to?
What I'm referring to, what I was going to ask a question.
I'll let you ask it.
Go ahead. I'm so confused.
Go ahead. I screwed that one up. I shouldn't have. I want to know what you were asking about, but I should just let you ask.
Yeah, the thing about it is that when I ask the question, you know what it's about.
I don't need to know.
So the
I'm just going to drink my Glenfiddich over here.
Whiskey is the broad category into really which good. A whole bunch of things fall,
yes.
Right? Like bourbon is whiskey. Scotch is whiskey, Irish whiskey.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, not whiskey.
Oh, come on.
Just kidding.
We're going to talk French, about Irish
I've tried Irish whiskey.
Yeah. Some of it's really bad. Some of it's really good. But anyways, I see what you're saying. Whiskey, the main category, the grand category is just made from grain.
But so people will say like, oh no, I don't want Scotch. I want whiskey.
Okay.
Like I've heard people make that. Is that a mistake?
That's a mistake.
Okay.
They might think whiskey is bourbon, but Scotch is Scotch.
Right. So they've had something in the past that was called whiskey that they tried, and then they tried Scotch and they were like, this is not what I had. I want what I had.
And that's an
but they don't have the vocabulary
that's
to articulate
an understandable
that.
Mistake to make.
Sure.
And when you go to a bar, some people don't really specify a brand.
Right.
They'll just say Scotch on the rocks, and that's up to the bartender to serve whatever he wants, which you don't want to take that risk, really.
Yeah, because they could either go with something that's cheap and bad or really expensive.
Yeah, and they could just do whatever they want. So do specify a brand, people. But anyways, whiskey is just distilled grain. So fermented grain that's made into a beer that's filtered, distilled, and then put into a barrel, and that's whiskey.
Right.
And lots of different countries make their own specific style. We here in America, we like to make our bourbon primarily from corn. Primarily from rye. And Scots like to make their stuff from barley. Mm-hmm. The French, they have barley over there in France. India, they have lots of barley grown in India, so they make their whiskey largely out of barley. It's really whatever grain is most prominent in your country. That's what people in centuries past have made their whiskey out of. But it's all whiskey, but each country or region or geographical area has over time made their own unique style, made their own unique expression. And if it's prominent enough, they usually get to have their own category called, like, for example, Scotch. That's just whiskey made in Scotland. It's a small country. You wouldn't think that they're the world leaders in it, but they've been making it for a long time. And boy, oh boy, do they make a lot of it. In my opinion, Scotland has the most prestigious and prominent distilling tradition in the world. And I say that because this is my second point. How has Scotch whiskey affected all of these other styles? They have in a huge way. I have to say this, technically, whiskey was kind of invented by the Irish. Technically speaking.
That doesn't surprise me.
Well, they were so close.
I just mean they're just drunk all the time.
Awkward. Well, no, I mean, they've been they're the best at it. No, they're the best at drinking it. But they technically, it was invented on the Emerald Isle. Mm-hmm. Furthest back the records go, they discovered that someone in Ireland started this whole thing. Hmm. But it had a lot of prominence in Scotland because all the monks were making the water of life, as they used to call it, which was used primarily as a medicinal thing. Hmm. You didn't really want to drink the stuff they made way back then.
Right.
It could kill you. and they thankfully perfected it over time. But
it could still kill you.
It could still kill you. Yes. It's really, we're drinking a toxin is what we're drinking.
Right.
When you say it that way. Oh, it gets a little scary. But all of the people that traveled from Scotland and Ireland to America as immigrants, they brought the distilling tradition with them. Anyone who distilled in America generally were farmers. Hmm. And farmers were generally descended from, there were Scots-Irish folks.
Sure.
Who brought over the distilling tradition from their home country. And that has exported in quite a few different areas. The Japanese distilling tradition is high reputation of superb quality Japanese whiskey. And people think that they have their own kind of style, but very, generally speaking, all Japanese whiskey is pretty much Scotch. It's made in the same way. It's made from barley.
But you can't say that. That's illegal.
Well, yes. Yes, but here's what I mean. One of a guy about 70 or 80 years ago, a representative from Suntory, a company called Suntory, mm-hmm. can't remember his name. He went to Scotland to learn how to distill and brought it back to Japan and started a distilling tradition in Japan. Huh. A lot of these roads came from Scotland, and they're kind of the world leaders. They make the most of it. That doesn't mean they should be the leaders in distilling, but they make the most
right.
from a very small country, and it's pretty cool.
That's also the case with Reformed theology.
How so?
All roads lead to Scotland.
All roads lead to Scotland. Thank God for them. Whiskey. Third point.
Now hold on. I'm going to ask. I'm going to interject here because at this point I've only tried. That's what I was going to say. At this point I've only tried the what do you call it?
We've tried the Lagavulin 16, the peated.
I care about these names. I really do. But it is just the case that they are words that don't like have any real meaning for me because
you get them over time.
They're gibberish.
Yeah, you'll get them over time.
Like, but it is absurd how easily I forget the names of scotches.
Yeah, even the wonderful Lagavulin 16. You forgot.
I know.
That's okay.
It's rough.
Yeah, there's a lot of names out there and they get kind of weird.
Right.
Like there's a whiskey called Ardbeg Ugadal. I mean, it's just gibberish. Gaelic gibberish.
Have you been reading Grudem again?
No, but it's my favorite whiskey, and it's just a really cool name. And over time, you kind of start to parse out all of these names, and it gets a lot easier. Third point, whiskey is made from grain. Typically, any given country or region's whiskey is made from the grains prominently grown there, which seems obvious, I know. But it's why our bourbon is made from corn and rye, and Scotch from barley. The reason why barley is used traditionally in Scotch whiskey is because it's a really hardy, tough grain that thrives in Scotland's bleak climate.
Mm.
So you might as well use the grain that grows the best there.
Right.
Not that corn can't be grown there or rye can't be grown in that region, but they make a lot of scotch from barley because barley is just a really traditional grain in Scotland.
Corn is actually vegetable teeth, according to Denny's Twitter.
Denny's, according to Denny's Twitter. Thank you. So there you go. Another point. There are three major categories. Now we're getting to the categories. Why I have the glasses in front of you. There are three major categories of Scotch whiskey flavors. We've already tried one. Lagavulin 16 is the peated Scotch whiskey. We're going to touch on peat here in a moment. So three categories. Peated whiskey, sherried whiskey, and bourbon-aged whiskey. Mm-hmm. Those are the three main flavor categories you're going to find in Scotch whiskey.
Hmm.
So when you go to the Scotch aisle, all those bottles you'll see will fall into one of those three categories. And that's what I've poured for you. So let's kind of go through some of those. What is another point? What is peated whiskey? We say that word a lot. Why does this taste and smell like a bunch of rotting vegetables were thrown on a campfire? But traditionally in Scotland, peat, which is basically semi-carbonized vegetal soil that's been compacted over time. It's all over Scotland. There's a lot of peat bogs. It's in the soil. People would dig that out, cut it into bricks, and use it as a fuel source.
Ah.
So, I mean, it's abundant. And that's what they use, which is an ingenious idea, but that has carried over into the distilling tradition. We'll talk a little bit about how it's part in the process of making a malt whiskey.
Right.
But basically, peat is used to dry the grains. In a specific point in the process, it's used to dry the grains to stop germination from happening. And the phenols, the chemical compounds where the smoke kind of resides, the smoke smell resides, stick to the grains and it carries through the distilling process. So that's why it's peated whiskey smells that way, because it's used prominently in the process of making the whiskey.
So what can we do to reduce our dependency on foreign peat?
You can't, because I love this stuff too much. I'm going to keep buying it. So yeah, that's why Lagavulin smells the way it does. Now we're going to talk about sherried whiskey. Second one that we have, I have that in my hand too.
I've been shaking it, or what's the word
you said? You got to swirl. You're agitating it. You got to swirl it. There you go. You'll get the rhythm.
This is very difficult for me.
You'll get it. It just takes time. It gets easier with, wow, that is really awful, David. No, I'm kidding. You got it. There, I saw it.
Yeah, see.
So we have a sherried whiskey in our hands right now. Glenfiddich 15 Solera Reserve. It's a lightly sherried whiskey. Mm-hmm. But let's explain what sherried whiskey is in terms of scotch. Way back when, the Scottish middle class drank copious amounts of sherry fortified wine. It's a dessert wine, sherry. It's like port. It's a sweeter wine.
What do you call it? Like nitrine,
yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I can't remember what nitrine has. It's fortified wine, right? Nitrine?
I don't know. You told me about it. I think that's correct.
I'm just trying to remember. Yeah, it is. I think it's a fortified wine. But fortified wines, a different kind of story, but they have lots of alcohol in them.
Right.
They're used as a dessert aperitif kind of wine, but they're really heavy hitters. You can't just down that stuff all of the time. But the Scots did. And because sherry was stored in barrels, casks, or sherry butts, as they call them, and they were all over the place, distillers started to store their whiskey in these sherry barrels.
I feel like that is half of whiskey history is like, well, we had these barrels and now it tastes like that.
You're kind of joking, but that's kind of how whiskey history evolved. Things happen not because some distiller thought, I believe this will be a great idea. It's, no, I need a place to put this stuff.
And I'm already drunk.
So why not? So, and this didn't start, I think, before the early 1900s, maybe in the 1800s, people started to realize that whiskey stored in sherry wine casks resulted in a really, really cool whiskey. But over time, whiskey makers started to utilize and exploit this really cool kind of aging process. So what they'll do is they'll age the majority of a whiskey's life in a barrel from America, a bourbon barrel.
That's actually how I was aged most of my life.
Thank you. In a bourbon barrel most of his life. But the last part of your life has been aged in a sherry cask.
Right.
So because the sherry character, they don't want it to overwhelm a whiskey, they don't keep it in a sherry cask for very long. It might be months. It might be a couple of years, depending on how saturated the barrel is with sherry wine.
Right.
They will do what's called a sherry finish. And lots of whiskeys, lots of popular whiskeys are sherry finished. It's just a traditional thing in Scotch whiskey to do this because the flavor-wise, it really works out.
Does that ever cross over with peated whiskeys?
Yes, but it can work. Like the whiskey that I told you about earlier, Ardbeg Ugadon with the funny name, that has sherry finishing in it. Ardbeg produces the highest peated phenol levels in the entire whiskey industry. Mm-hmm. It's the most peated whiskey that you can get. And some of their whiskeys, they incorporate sherry finishing. But you can't do too much because in the peated world, too much sherry finishing, it makes a bad mix. It doesn't blend well.
Sure.
So you don't see it that often. So the whiskey I have for you, a Glenfiddich 15 Solera Reserve, is, I would say, moderately finished in sherry barrels. It's not what the whiskey geeks call sherry bomb or a sherry bomb where it's just kind of sherry city.
Right.
It's just, it feels like you're just kind of drinking really painting the town sherry, drinking really strong sherry wine. So this is pretty good. So have you smelled it yet?
I have.
Process? Do you like it's there's no peating in it whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good example of enough barley character for you to discern, but plenty of sherry flavoring and flavor characteristics and aroma characteristics for you to enjoy. Do you like it? This is one of the popular ones. This is one of the most popular sherried whiskeys on the market today. It's also one of my favorites.
I do like the smell. I have to say, I don't understand what distinguishes, like what sherry, what are the characteristics of sherry to be looking for?
Have you tried port wine
before? I don't think I have.
So let's talk quickly about sherry flavor characteristics. Because
I want to know that before I try this.
Okay, you're going to probably smell, typically in a sherried whiskey, dates, sugared dates, raisins, or sugared raisins, that too.
Citrus, so like marmalade. Sherried would make a good date night drink.
Yes, it would.
Okay.
You
said marmalade? I have never had marmalade.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen that tasting note lots of times and I've sensed it in a sherried whiskey. Maybe just think like a citrusy kind of jam. But citrus notes, you get a lot of deeper citrus notes in a sherried whiskey. But the main note, and I'm getting it on the finish right now. I took a swallow of this and I'm just getting like sugared dates, really nice, ripe sugared dates. And that's the, if balanced well, those are the aromas you're going to get in a sherried whiskey. And it's really good. So I'm going to sip it one more time and I'm going to keep it in there for a little bit. This is really good. I don't like using the word or descriptor smooth in whiskey. It's kind of amateur to do that. But this, if I were to use that descriptor, I would use it with this whiskey. It goes down really well. It's not harsh. It doesn't scratch at you.
Yeah.
It sits really well in the mouth. It's a real easygoing evening whiskey. It's really good. So what do you think about that? You're a peated whiskey guy, but I tried to give you a good example of a nice balanced sherry whiskey. It's not kicking the crap out of you, but what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's good. I like that. I mean, if I were to try to relate it to some other alcoholic beverage, it would probably be wine. Like it pulls more in the flavors that you would expect from wine.
Yeah. Have you tried brandy before?
I have not.
Some people get brandy like notes.
Isn't that a dog?
What? No. Okay. Is that a Denny's joke or
no? No, I feel like there's a famous dog named Brandy.
I've never heard of Brandy. Yes. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's from.
Okay, good. Well, we'll move on.
That's what I do is I make references. I don't know what they're to.
All right. Next point in Jim's fantastic
quiz. Can I just say something?
Yes.
How do you feel about soup spoons? Do you like those?
Soup spoons? No.
Oh, okay. Do you like butter knives?
Yes.
Okay. Denny says that if you like soup spoons and butter knives, you'll love food tables and people chairs.
Okay. I like that one. That's good.
Also, I just wanted to point out that their Wild West omelet is just an omelet, but a cowboy has to hand it to you.
Do they have one on staff?
Of course they do.
Okay. All right. Good. Let's move on with the whiskey stuff. Hey, have you ever had an instinct to judge a whiskey by its color? You know, kind of like we talked a little bit earlier about misconceptions in the popular world of how to like order whiskey or what scotch is versus what whiskey is. One of those misconceptions, another misconception is that darker whiskeys are better than lighter ones.
Oh, I wouldn't have, I wouldn't have thought better, but like I can tell you in the beer world, like when I first came into the beer world,
is that a thing in the beer world? Like darker is means something different than other, obviously than the, what it's, what kind of beer it is, but
right. Well, I guess what I found is that my, most of my expectations of like what to expect from a dark beer, not that they would be better, but that most of them are just wrong. That like, I expected darker maybe to be, when I first started, I thought that darker would be more bitter. And that turned out to be false. Because if you compare like Guinness to any IPA, you're up for the literally the inverse of that expectation. And then I thought that dark beers were generally maltier, but there are plenty of like very dark beers that taste basically like an IPA and are not malty at all. So that's kind of when you said the color thing, I was like, well, I'm guessing that if you look at a whiskey, you can make no guesses about what the color is going to indicate.
You can do it depending on what whiskey it is. In the bourbon world, if it's a straight bourbon, we'll talk about more about what that means. If it's a straight bourbon, then color matters a great deal. In the Scotch world, color does not matter that much. Some may say that it does, but in my opinion, it doesn't. But I will say that I think it's accurate to say that people have a misconception about color and whiskey. If they have two glasses in front of them and one is, you know, very rich mahogany.
Right.
And the one.
Break it down. Are you kidding me? That's hand carved mahogany.
Oh, I understood that. Right. And another one is a really pale whiskey.
Right.
They may have this misconception. They may make a judgment that the darker one is better.
The darker one looks classier. I will give it you does. That.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's what an advertising executive on Madison Avenue would be drinking, you know, in New York in 1964.
Yep. He's got to go see a man about a horse.
Yeah, okay. but there are some pale whiskeys I have tried that have burned my face off.
You drink
off.
Those out of like a bucket?
No. it got my bucket here.
My pail of whiskey.
I'll just go off in the backyard and enjoy myself for a moment. color should not matter because in the Scotch world, it is legal to add coloring.
What?
It's legal to add the general phrase is caramel coloring. There's a specific scientific designation for this, but the point is they claim a flavorless caramel additive to a lot of Scotch whiskeys. They say it's to standardize color. Because if you put the same whiskey in two different barrels, you may get a slightly different hue on one than the other, but it's the same whiskey, and it all blends together when a distillery makes their release, when they make their bottle, when they put it into their brand. Sometimes it's a mixture of many different barrels, but it's the same whiskey. And they say that to standardize color is a good idea, and I get the argument. I really do. If you bought a bottle of Glenfiddich 15, for example, one day, and a year later, you bought the same another bottle of it and the color was different, you probably have the questions in your mind. And I get that. To standardize color is a good thing. However, in my opinion, in the opinion of many others, they do this to capitalize on that misconception that I talked to you about. Because after all, at the end of the day, most of the consumers are going to make a judgment on that whiskey because of its color.
Can I be honest with you?
Yes.
Thank you.
This is the only time I let you, so don't waste it.
No, that was all.
Right, no, just for future, in the future, Jim.
No, I think that, like, what you do with whiskey makes sense to me. Like the amount of research that you do, the amount that you know about it, that makes sense to me, because you're talking about spending like $80 on a bottle that you're probably going to have for less than a year.
We're
going to
talk about price.
And that's the thing is like when I first got into whiskey, I was like, oh, well, that's fine. Like $60-$70 on a bottle. That's fine. Especially if I have it for like 2 years. And then you find out that like, no, you probably shouldn't keep it for 2 years.
No,
like,
because
once you open it, especially like if you were to keep it for 2 years and have used almost none of it, that's better than if you have like a third of a bottle left or whatever.
Yeah. Like my Lagavulin bottle, as you can see, it's starting to get down there. I shouldn't keep this for too much.
But honestly, that's kind of nice for me to know, because I am the kind of person who would like 8 years later, like have drank almost none of it and been like, yeah, I'm really saving it for a special occasion.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, I don't remember why I was saying that. Oh, so that makes sense to me. But people who will buy an $80 bottle, like people who are rich and buy it as like a status symbol, that makes no sense to me.
Why does it not make sense to you?
Because if you can't, if you don't understand what you're drinking or like anything about it, and you're one of those people thinking like, oh, the darker is better. Like, that just seems like a lot of money to spend.
Here's what that is. It's infuriating to people like me and to people like you, sensible people who want to have a good value. Mm-hmm. Don't want to spend too much money. But if we do, we're going to cherish that sucker.
Exactly.
But you kind of said the phrase status symbol. Mm-hmm. People buy whiskeys for status. I call them rich dentists. Not that they're rich or they're dentists, but just rich dentist seems to fit. It's a stereotype that I've made up in my mind. The rich dentist.
I was thinking lawyers, but yeah.
They do this crap too. But they
And it's almost like I mean, it's literally important for you to do stuff like that when you're a lawyer. Because having the fancy watch that everybody can look at and say, oh, that costs you $20,000.
In your office, you have the mahogany little bar in the corner. You need the good whiskeys.
Exactly.
That look like.
And I do understand that more where like the status symbol is actually necessary for your clientele to hire you.
Okay, I can understand that.
Like that makes sense to me, but I would still want to enjoy it if I was going to.
Yeah. And not that rich people don't enjoy their whiskey. I'm sure they do. But unfortunately, there is a kernel of truth in the stereotype of the rich dentist or the rich lawyer buying stuff they know nothing about, spending a lot of money on it and not really appreciating it. But you know what? That's a horse we're going to ride on a different day. But it is a thing. It is a thing. So color shouldn't matter in Scotch whiskey. You have to be careful. So don't judge a Scotch whiskey by its color.
Right.
Do not, because it might have caramel coloring in it. And there are light colored whiskeys that are really, really, really good. Mm-hmm. And there are some dark colored whiskeys that are pretty awful. So don't let color taint your perceptions.
It's also pretty much the same when it comes to toast. Like there are varying shades of toast.
Yeah.
But when it comes right down to it, toast is al dente bread.
Okay. Thank you, Denny's, for the win. Let's move on to another point that I want to share with you. I'm going to bring up one of my favorite whiskey enjoyment tools. There are some process-minded people out there, some engineering types that like analytical tools to help them enjoy a hobby. Mm. Well, I got those too, and I'm going to share one with you. It's called a flavor map of Scottish whiskey.
Oh, is this a Spectrum?
Yeah, you're going to love this.
Love Spectrums.
Please disregard the quality of the picture. I just got it off of Google.
Did you take a picture of this your phone?
I didn't. It looks like I did, but I didn't. So, folks, this is going to be hard for me to describe on the air.
It's live, also hard for me to read.
Live in our studio, but I'm going to have a link to this. So David's going to have a link to this in our show notes so you can see.
Probably better than we can.
This. Would you stop complaining over there too much? This is what's called a flavor map of Scottish whiskeys. Could you help me just.
I'm sorry. Keep going.
What are you doing?
I just read a tweet by accident.
You read a Denny's tweet.
I just glanced down and I was like, oh, that's hilarious.
So a famous whiskey writer named Dave Broom developed this tool for evaluating what a whiskey is going to taste like in terms of flavor categories. He categorized all Scotch whiskeys into what he calls flavor camps. These flavor camps include rich and round, smoky, and peaty, light and delicate kinds of whiskeys, but he gave like a designation that he would categorize the whiskey under. And he put it into what I guess you could call quadrants. Mm-hmm, would you kind of concur with that? So this tool that we're looking at
Quadranians,
right now,
yeah.
That we're going to link to in the show notes, can place a whiskey into quadrants that can tell you and indicate if how light a whiskey is versus how rich a whiskey is, how delicate a whiskey is versus how smoky a whiskey is. And for example, I'll give an example. Let's see if we can find Lagavulin 16 is actually on this graph.
I see that.
It's in the upper right corner. It is considered a very rich whiskey. You can see it on the spectrum there, right? There's a spectrum of light to rich. Mm-hmm. Lagavulin 16 is very much on the rich side of things. And then on a perpendicular metric, there is delicate to smoky. And Lagavulin is designated as a very smoky whiskey. So on this tool, you can, if you're looking at what kind of whiskey Lagavulin 16 is going to taste like, what kind of whiskey is it going to be? It's placed as a very smoky and rich whiskey. And there are probably about 50 whiskeys on these quadrants placed on here to give you an indication of what it's going to taste like. This is a really, really cool tool. So let's go on the complete opposite. So using this tool, we can look at what an opposite opposite on the spectrum of Lagavulin 16, there's a whiskey down here called Rosebank 12. That is a very, very, very light whiskey. It's a very, very, very delicate whiskey. If that's what you're looking for, you can look on this flavor wheel and check that out. It's a really cool, if you have tried a couple of brands in your time, you can see where these line up. And if you liked a certain brand or a certain bottle, you can look for like-minded whiskeys or whiskeys that have similar flavors.
Whiskeys that have similar political perspectives and religious views.
Like-minded whiskeys. Yes, I said that. Thank you for, you well, never miss
it. We all know Scotch is Presbyterian.
Yeah, you're right. you're totally right. This is a really cool tool to have. So I want to share it with the audience on the show notes, and please look at that. It's a really cool tool to evaluate Scottish flavors.
This is very interesting.
Yeah. And I hope I described it somewhat decent on the air here, but.
Okay. So yeah. Lagavulin is more sherried than, or tastes more sherried than Laphroaig by a long shot.
Yes.
Cause I'm looking at up here. They're both at the peak of smoky.
Yep. Lagavulin utilizes sherry finishing in their whiskeys.
But Lagavulin pulls all the way over to sherried, whereas Laphroaig pulls toward leafy stewed fruit ripeness.
So an overall takeaway is the Scotch whiskey category has a lot of different flavor characteristics in it. There's a huge spectrum.
I mean, this looks like polka dots.
Yeah, a little bit for everybody in the Scotch whiskey category. Next up, what is the difference between malted whiskey and blended whiskey? Folks, most folks drink. If you're drinking Scotch, most of them are going to be drinking a blended whiskey. But the whiskeys that I have for us today, mm-hmm. they're all single malts. So what's the difference? 90% of the market. 90% of the market share is blended whiskey.
Hmm.
90% of people, 90% of whiskey bought is blended whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
And only 10% is the mighty and famous single malt category. It's a really weird lopsided statistic, but that's just the case. Scotch is imported into many, many different countries. And most of those people like blended whiskey. Here in the States and probably in Europe, or I should say Britain, single malts are becoming very much a very popular category. They have the most press, let's just say this, because they're the most interesting. The stereotype is that single malt whiskeys have more flavor than blends. That's not really necessarily true, but let me give you a quick little explanation on the difference between the two. We're drinking single malts today. We're not drinking blended whiskey. Blended whiskey, technically, can come from a number of different distilleries, different whiskeys from different regions. Very different whiskeys can be blended into one whiskey. You have to designate that a blended whiskey. You cannot call that a single malt. And lots of blended whiskeys have in it as a component what is called grain whiskey. And grain whiskey is almost close to vodka because it's distilled at a high proof and it's distilled in a still called a column still. A column still, or what's called a continuous still, is a still that can almost 24/7 be operating. It was invented by a guy named Annius Coffey, I believe in the 1800s. It's just an industrial age kind of innovation for whiskey. You can pump out a lot of whiskey and you can do it all day, but it strips out a lot of the flavor. So they use a lot of grain whiskey as a component in blends, as kind of filler. So that takes away some of the taste. You may get away with a good nose on a blended whiskey, but you're going to find out real soon when you actually taste it. Malt whiskey, single malt whiskey, whiskeys like Lagavulin, Glenfiddich, Glenlivet, Laphroaig, Ardbeg, they're made from one distillery. They cannot be blended from numerous distilleries. They're made from one distillery. And they do what's called... the process is called malting. They malt the grains. They trick
That's
it.
Where the grains shed their feathers.
Yes. And well, when people hear that word malt, they think, what is it like how they make milkshakes or something? Or like malted candy, like Whoppers? I don't know. What's malt mean? It's a strange name for what it actually means or what it actually entails. But it has nothing to do with malting feathers. It has nothing to do with Whoppers. Has nothing to do with milkshakes.
Or Burger King Whoppers. What Although those taste a little peated.
Yeah. They actually do because it's a, what, they grill.
Char, whatever.
They char grill.
Yeah.
So malted whiskey, they take the grain and they trick it into growing. They trick it into germinating by steeping it into water. Ah,
tricksy.
They trick it, and so it starts to sprout and grow because it thinks it's time to grow. They stop it by kilning it, by drying it, and they could use peat as fuel to for the fires to dry the grain, to stop it from germinating. Or they just put heat on it, or hot air, and that stops the drying. And then after that, they mill it into a real fine flour called grist. And then they add hot water to that in what's called a mash. And that caramelizes it. In effect, caramelizes the grist into converting to sugar. And what do you need when you throw yeast in something? Yeast likes sugar. So when you get the distiller's yeast and you throw it in the mash tun, fermentation happens. So that process is malting. It's specific to single malts. So that's how our whiskeys today were made. It's incredibly boring, but for a whiskey geek like me, I love stuff like that. All right, next point. How is whiskey aged? And where do they get their barrels? Almost all of Scotch whiskey is aged in barrels that once held bourbon. In America, it's legally required that to age bourbon, straight bourbon, you have to use brand new oak barrels, and you cannot reuse them. You can, but most of bourbon made in America is used or made from, or rather matured in new oak barrels. So where do those barrels go?
Oakland.
Oakland. They all go to Oakland, California. Over time, relationships have been developed between American distillers and Scottish distillers. So the Americans just send it over to Scotland. So Scots, they get the used barrels from America. And some Scotch, third Jim flavor category, it's bourbon aged. So when I say bourbon aged Scotch, all that means is it's Scotch whiskey aged in a barrel that once held bourbon.
Right.
And that's how most Scotch whiskey is made. So let's try real quick an example of a Scotch that has no sherry in it, no peat in it, just bourbon barrel aged Scotch.
This does smell a little bit more like bourbon.
Well, I mean, yeah. You can't get away from, and when you're smelling bourbon, you're getting a big vanilla aroma from the oak barrels.
And there was
a prominent oak characteristic is vanilla.
There was a distinct, like, fruity, I guess I would describe it as, on the one that we just tried.
Right.
Whereas this one doesn't seem to have that.
Okay.
You might which I'm guessing that was the sherry.
Yep. This one's, you're probably not going to get a whole lot of fruit in this. You're going to get sweeter things. Vanilla, toffee, some barley cereal grain, biscuity notes, yeasty notes.
Biscuity. Maybe. That's fascinating. Biscuity. Like KFC.
No, not quite that. but something like that. Like bread.
Right.
A bread notes of some sort. Maybe some floral notes you might get in there, like grass, freshly cut grass.
That I'm allergic to that.
Very different. Very different. This is becoming a category of Scotch whiskey that I'm liking a lot. I like peated whiskey. I like sherried whiskey, but I just want to know what a Scotch whiskey distilled from barley, nothing else. I just want to know what that tastes like.
I've been drinking Evan Williams bourbon lately.
Yeah.
A little bit. And I can definitely, this definitely has a lot of bourbon-y notes to it. I can almost taste a little bit of the vanilla that you taste in
You should be getting more of it. So moving along, whiskey regions do not matter unless it's Islay. So the first whiskey that we tried, Lagavulin, that was from Islay. And that's a whiskey region. It's an island off the west coast of Scotland called Islay. There are a number of other whiskey regions to speak of. There's for example, the Speyside region of Scotland. There is the Highland region. There is the Lowland region of Scotland. There's the Campbelltown region. There is even a category called Island. Non-Islay. Whiskey's like Talisker. Have you ever heard of Talisker?
No.
That's from an island, but it's non-Islay. So it's peaty, but it's not an Islay whiskey. So these are all categories. And people have tried to assign these regions flavor characteristics, and it can't really be done. There are Highland whiskeys that taste the same as Lowland whiskeys. There are whiskeys from Speyside that taste just like whiskeys from the Highland
region. But don't tell the people that live there.
No, they might have some like Speyside. The most Scottish distilleries are in the Speyside region. There's a ton of distilleries there from the River Spey. They're positioned along the River Spey. There's a strong distilling tradition there, but their whiskeys are not that distinctive in terms of flavor. The only whiskey region, like if someone tries to say, oh, that's a good whiskey, it's from the Highlands. Nah, I mean, it might be a good whiskey, but it's not because it's from the Highlands.
Right.
The only whiskey region that has true bona fide characteristic flavor distinctives is really Islay. There are other whiskeys from other regions that can be made with peat, but Islay whiskeys have a really huge flavor distinction.
I was given the opportunity to own some land there.
Oh, yeah. What was it? Lefroy?
That's Lefroy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I guess a couple opportunities now.
It's
yeah.
like a fan, not a fan club, but just a customer appreciation group.
Yeah, basically, and, like if you go there and you give them this piece of paper that, mm-hmm. that comes with the bottle.
They'll give you a little plot.
They'll give you a little. I think it's probably, it can't be more than like 3 square centimeters. Yeah.
But it's yours.
Right.
And they give it to you. That's pretty cool.
Well, they probably measure it in inches because yeah. the metric system is a lie.
It's a
people don't actually use
grand
it.
Lie. Why is Scotch whiskey so old? Bourbon is 6 to 8 years old. A lot of it's a lot younger.
That's because America's so young.
We're so young. We're young bucks. And Scotch whiskey typically is 8 to 12 years old. Sometimes older. Like the whiskeys we've tried a 16-year-old Lagavulin.
Mm-hmm.
Bourbons. Mm-hmm. Bourbons should not be 16 years old or they would taste like liquid oak.
Ah.
We have a 15-year-old right here. We have a 14-year-old
oh,
right here. Oh,
is that because... No, you... Never mind. Keep going.
Could you reason your way through that? I mean, it's more simple.
I was going to guess that it was had to do with using the old bourbon barrels.
Yeah, that's part of it.
But
big time.
Then, wait, what distinguishes a scotch that happens to have been aged in a bourbon barrel from a bourbon-aged scotch? Or am I just confused?
You're confusing those. All, if it's not sherry finished,
mm-hmm.
The scotch has been aged in a barrel that has once held bourbon.
Right.
All of them are.
So then what is bourbon aged?
That's just kind of like a gym phrase. That's to distinguish from sherry and Islay.
So you mean that's...
It's less about bourbon and more about the fact that it doesn't have anything else. Doesn't have anything else. It's just a simple Scottish barley aged in a bourbon barrel. And that's what you got.
Right.
It's using barrels that previously held whiskey. And a lot of the flavor potential has kind of been already used.
Right.
And so you need to age it longer just to get the kind of flavor you want. And also, Scotland's climate is pretty bleak and cold and pretty miserable over there. And they don't have a lot of temperature swings that we have here in America, mm-hmm. especially like in Kentucky. Their winters are cold and their summers are blisteringly hot.
Right.
And everything's humid. And the temperature variations have a huge effect on whiskey barrels aging in Kentucky. And it's different in Scotland. So these whiskeys have to age a little bit longer in Scotland. Hmm. So that's kind of why they're a little bit older.
Now, I know we're going to do an episode on bourbon, but I'm a little curious. I think the best bourbon that I have actually tried is the Evan Williams. Just like the standard.
Do you like it because it's not like...
I like it because it's
setting,
cheap.
Setting,
it's kind of a go-to because like, oh, I like this.
Evan Williams isn't bad.
No, I mean, don't it's really wrong. Not. But what would I expect if I treaded further into bourbon territory? Like what would be different about Evan Williams versus something that costs twice as much?
In my opinion, there is not as much flavor variation in the bourbon world as there is in the Scotch world.
Hmm.
Because all bourbon... has at least 51% corn in it. Most of it has rye as a flavoring grain. So like a certain percentage, maybe 20 to 30% of the grain mash bill is rye and the rest of it's malted barley, maybe a little bit of wheat.
Hmm.
And sometimes the rye is replaced with wheat. But I mean, there's not a lot of huge variances in the bourbon world. So if you're drinking Evan Williams and you drink another bourbon that's been made in a similar way, you're not going to have too much. You're not going to have too much of a flavor shock.
Hmm.
You know, if it's bourbon, it's going to taste mostly with the same core flavors, the same core flavors of vanilla, corn, oak, maybe a little bit of blackberry.
Hmm.
Those are going to be there in all of them.
Hmm.
So, and Evan Williams is a high rye bourbon. So maybe I should find like a wheated bourbon for you. And we'll see how you like that one. Moving along, does ABV matter on a scotch's taste? Yes. Most blended scotches have 40% ABV.
I think ABV matters regardless of what you're drinking. Like that's something that I always notice.
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge thing.
In wine, in beer, in whiskey. in vodka.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, if a scotch, most scotches...
In Long Island iced teas.
Non-Islay. We should add that in there. It's not peated, so it's not a peated cocktail. So ABV matters. So when you buy a bottle of whiskey, look at the bottle and look what the ABV is. It's all posted on there. A lot of them are, if it's a 40% ABV, it could nose well, but it's not going to taste as strong.
Hmm.
The flavor is going to be is missing a little bit. The heft, the weight of the flavor.
The chutzpah
of the flavor. If it's 40%, is not going to be as strong.
So what's like a normal ABV?
And Scotch, 43% is standard.
Hmm.
You see a lot of, like, Lagavulin's
43. Mm-hmm.
Glenfiddich here, the 14-year-old, I believe, this is 43%.
Mm-hmm. Is that legal?
Yeah.
Because it's only 14.
It can't go below 40.
Mm.
But it is legal. Thank you. Is that from Denny's or no?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay. Anyways.
It's all original.
If you start to see ABVs of 46% on a Scotch bottle, you're in fun territory. Go for those. Anything over 50, and they're hard to find. They're more expensive. But do not be afraid. In Scotch whiskey, do not be afraid of high ABVs.
Mm.
It's a lot of fun. If you want to add a little bit of water into your glass, do that. It's okay. But the more ABV, the more flavor. Now, don't think more alcohol, even though that's true. There are benefits to added alcohol. And for all whiskeys, this isn't a Scotch thing, but just keep that in mind. When you're a high ABV Scotch is a beautiful thing to behold.
Hmm.
And a lot of the Islas, like Ardbeg and Laphroaig, have high ABVs in some of their stuff, and it's just wonderful. Hmm. Absolutely wonderful whiskey. Why is Scotch so expensive? Because it's imported. So,
out of curiosity then, yeah, like, would it be substantial? I mean, I know just taxes alone, but would it be substantially cheaper in Scotland? If one were to live there? Not that I'm looking to move, but we might.
I honestly don't know. I have not looked at pricing over there. Hmm. There are websites that I look at a lot that are based in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And I've checked the conversion rates on some of them. There's not a huge difference. So I don't think it's that much of a difference. If you want to really get good prices on booze, buy it from California, ironically.
Hmm.
California has such has really good tax laws when it comes to buying liquor. It is really cheap down there.
I wonder what...
incredibly cheap.
I wonder what Colorado is like.
I don't know. Hopefully it's a good thing, but maybe not, because here in Washington State, we have massive taxes on our liquor.
Oh, I bought beer in Pennsylvania, and I was just like, so like the price that I saw was like a teaser for the actual price.
Teaser. Well,
it's like the 90-second Star Wars first trailer.
Yeah. Well, okay. Scotch prices have been rising dramatically in probably the past decade, to the point where the category is closed off to a lot of people because of the prices. And it's about to get worse. My last point for the Scotch episode for our listeners and you and me is that there is a tariff coming for Scotch whiskey. Not all of them are going to be affected.
Thanks, Obama.
Thanks, Obama. But anyways, that's coming. So if you guys are interested in any of the Scotches that we've talked about today, or Scotch in general, I actually mean this when I say it, you might want to jump on it soon. Because I don't know the specifics on how much the prices are going to go up. They're not going to go up on all of them. These are some selected bottles.
Mm-hmm.
But you are going to see some higher prices, even more than they have been lately, on some Scotch whiskey.
Go ahead.
I'm done.
Oh. So the second one that we tried was a Glenlivet. It was sherried. Am I correct? Glenfiddich.
Fiddick. You'll get there.
Maybe if I try to say them with a Scottish accent. Glenfiddich.
That's fun. Glenfiddich. Glenlivet. Lagavulin.
You just have to sound really angry and slightly drunk.
Yeah, it sounds great.
Boy,
this is a long episode. That's my fault. Sorry.
Glenfiddich. What was that? You said a 15? Was what you showed me?
15. The sherried one is a 15-year-old.
I'm going to make a recommendation here for listeners, and you can tell me if I'm wrong. That's kind of why I'm making it, to see if I've learned something today. But if you've tried bourbon, because bourbon tends to be a lot cheaper to get into, it seems.
Yes, it is a lot cheaper, and that's a real big advantage.
And so if you're looking to, in a reasonable price range, step into the world of Scotch, it sounds like what you want to do is start with, I mean, Laphroaig was great for us because that was like, oh, this is very, like, so we tried, I think Glenlivet was what we tried first. And I was like, this does not taste significantly different from bourbon. It was different, to be clear. Yeah. But like
the flavor shock was in the Lafroig, right?
Exactly. And Lafroig was so if you've tried bourbon and you're like, well, I want to try scotch, I would try something that's sherried. I don't know if the Glenlivet was or not, or something that's peated.
Yeah. I mean, you're taking a risk with peated whiskey because people either like fall madly in love with
it. And so
it,
that might be something better to try it like a bar.
So I hope that was helpful to you.
It really was. I have to say,
yeah,
because we're moving, I'm really glad that we're doing these because I feel like I'm going to get kind of my education. I'll even be able to come back and listen to this episode.
I hope so.
Which is not going to have a clever title because nobody said anything funny.
We didn't say anything. This was probably the least funny episode we've done. But it's a service-based episode, public service. It's information heavy.
This is basically PBS.
This is the only topic that I'm fine with teaching.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't think I'm fine with teaching. Totally, this would be an interesting episode. I don't know if I'm fine with teaching anything.
But whiskey, though?
Well, I can't teach whiskey.
No, eventually you may.
I can learn whiskey.
But this was information heavy, folks. We're sorry about that. But this hobby, as with lots of other hobbies, can carry with it lots of knowledge. But the knowledge is there to help you enjoy it more. So don't be afraid of knowledge when it comes to whiskey, or if you're into wine, there's lots of knowledge to seek out in that hobby, or there are a lot of hobbies you can really dive deep into this, and it's made better with information. So
that's true, but you don't want to do too many of them because eventually you just become a snob.
Yeah, don't do too much of it, and don't do wine and whiskey.
So what's up next? What are we
doing?
We're
going to do bourbon next week.
Ah, that's exciting.
So we're going to talk.
What's your plan? I want to know the whole shebang.
The whole shebang. We're going to do something similar. We're going to do the top maybe 10 things. Maybe I won't go 15 because our
episode turns into like a 4-hour episode.
We're a little long today.
We could have had like twice as much.
Yeah. So I might just do 10 things, but 10 things that I think a new bourbon drinker should know in order to help them enjoy the drink more. That's what we're going to do.
And then are you going to do anything after that?
We're going to do Irish and Canadian after that.
Wow, Canadian.
Yeah, and we're going to we're also going to talk to World Whiskey.
Okay.
All the other categories. So it's going to be a bit of a catch-all episode, but I'm going to focus much of my time on the Irish.
All right.
And then that's going to be it. So
exciting.
It's a three-episode series.
Does Canadian whiskey taste maple-y?
Yeah.
I'm kind of excited now.
And I'm going to tell you exactly why that is.
Is it maple-aged?
No, it's not, but we'll get to it.
All right. I'm sorry. I'm spoiling.
So we're gonna give our... I've been frantically trying to down the whiskey. I've been talking so much. I haven't really been drinking.
I haven't either because I was following your lead.
And I have to go soon. So I'm like, do I have to like down this? I'm going to do it. So I'm going to down my Lagavulin. Oh, that's good. Yeah. Mm. That's wonderful. My mouth feels like it has burning seaweed in it, and I love it. That's it for us, folks. We're going to see you next week. We're going to talk about bourbon. It's going to be fun.
I actually have an announcement.
Oh, this is good. Yeah.
The next episodes that we do covering whiskey, we're going to drink them earlier in the episode rather than downing them at the end.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have an after show that covers something like paedo baptism.
Yeah, we're going to have bottles in our hands instead of glasses.
Exactly.
And folks, big announcement. Next week, we're going to do the Reformed Pubcast parody.
You're just going to tell people that?
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Well, I guess that means that now we don't have to like have a lead in. We can just like confuse people who didn't hear this episode. They're like, is this the Reformed Pubcast?
We'll tell them.
Right.
listen to episode 62 if you want to get a refresher on how to taste. But we're going to make it sound like it's the Reformed Pub.
Right.
Because we're going to say, so what are you drinking over there?
And all
we're
right.
We're going to say Evan Williams. Well, that's all I got, folks. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.
I can bring some of that. Yeah.
Yeah, good. Bye.
Bye.